Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's the Sunday show here at Here Be Monsters, and with Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson today. Again, this Sunday we have Cliff Serentine with us, the author and the naturalist. And are you a naturalist?
I am. Cliff?
Well, there you go.
I am, yeah.
A man who lives with his family pretty much in the wild. I wanted to play your video. Today we're going to be talking about the project that you have underway over at Kickstarter to raise some money to make a documentary entitled A Forest Under Siege. So I'm just going to play the video for folks to get an idea of where we're going with this.
Sure.
Hello, David. David's in the room.
Canada is home to one of the world's last great forests. A vast swath of green. It spans from east coast to west and stretches all the way to the Arctic Circle. Canada's forest is home to uncounted species of plants, fungi, and animals. It is an invaluable purifier of fresh water. Like a great lung, it forms a vast carbon sink which preserves the health of our world. It is the last great refuge of endangered wildlife such as wolves, grizzlies, and wolverines, species all but wiped out in the United States and on other continents. In terms of landmass, Canada is the second largest nation in the world. In such a vast land, with a population under 35 million, it is easy to imagine the Great Forest is inexhaustible. Most Canadians think of it as an immutable fact of life. We take comfort in this. Out beyond the workaday world, past the endless gray steel and concrete of the cities, there is always that wide green place, beautiful, unspoiled. Oh, but the unbroken forest is an illusion. For more than a decade, forces have been at work at federal and provincial levels to allow big industry to decimate woodlands. Some provinces have quietly increased logging quotas by huge amounts, to the point that Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Prince Edward Island have almost no ecologically intact old forests. Anywhere loggers can reach by road or boat is fair game. The federal government under the Harper administration has quietly destroyed scientific data on environmental matters, fired scientists, and ordered investigators not to prosecute big industry when it violates what environmental protections remain intact. To avoid outrage, pulp mills and biofuel operations have learned to hide the destruction. Often cuts are done on high ground in backcountry where few are likely to become aware of them. If clear-cutting near roads, narrow cosmetic hedges, near thin lines of trees, are left standing to conceal the damage. From a distance, it is nearly invisible. Canadians and visitors rarely see what is really happening to their forests. They drive down highways and rural secondary roads, thinking there is a healthy woodland all around. But get out of the car and hike a couple hundred yards off the road, and one will discover the unbroken forest was only an illusion, a mere hedge, and behind lies only wreckage. A forest that has been cut down to be burned for so-called green biofuel or ground into pulp for paper, all for a few dollars per ton. It takes centuries to establish old forests and healthy ecosystems, but they can be wiped out in a moment, and once gone, they are effectively gone forever. It's time for a change, and change starts with telling the story, the real story of a forest under siege.
So that's your introductory video over at Indiegogo, and I think you have a Kickstarter campaign also, or am I wrong on that?
Well, I had started it on Kickstarter, but I decided to move it to Indiegogo just due to the way they do things. And it's mainly a matter of pressure, really. Kickstarter has this policy where you either attain your goal, or it's a binary, either attain your goal or the fundraiser is a fail, in which case nothing happens. So rather than do with that, I'm going to make this documentary even if I have to raise the funds for it a dollar at a time. So rather than do that, I just put it on Indiegogo, which has, I think they call it a stretch policy, where you run a fundraiser. If our goal is 10,000, which it is, and we raise 2,000, then it's 2,000, and then we can run another campaign a month later, 6 months later, whatever we need to, and just keep putting together the funds that way. So it's just
it's a sound decision, Cliff. I know from another person's experience that with Kickstarter,
I guess they're a wonderful organization too, but you're stuck. If you don't raise all the money, you don't get any of the money. So, you know, it's important to have money to be able to do a project like that, and it takes a lot of money to do it, as you know, and you're going about it very sensibly, it sounds like. So I can't wait to see the final product. Will you tell us about it a little bit this hour?
Well, it's in the making. I guess you could say it's been in the making for several years now. I've had an on-off relationship with Canada for most of my life. I first came here when I was 18. I'm a dual citizen. My wife's Canadian. We've been married 24 years, and we moved back here to stay about 10 years ago. But I'll tell you, this country is not what it was when I first came to it a generation ago. It was very socially conscious, very environmentally conscious at the time. And I know it's going to rub some people wrong, but in the last 10, 15 years, Canada has become an extremely materialistic country. When I first came here 25 years ago, it seemed like the first thing that was on everybody's mind was human rights, social justice, mm-hmm. environmental care, and money is God in Canada right now.
Oh, yeah.
And
Stephen Harper has really
aggravated that, hasn't he? I'm sorry, what's that?
Stephen Harper has really aggravated that, hasn't he?
He has. I wouldn't attribute it all to Harper. I know he's a popular target right now.
Bad influence from the U.S.
Him, but when I first came here, the Kyoto Accord was in the works when my wife and I first came back here to stay about 10 years ago. And Harper was not even heard of, really, at the time. And Canada, I remember all the way from the West Coast, we moved here. We bought a homestead. We moved here from Alaska. And on the drive over all the way from the West Coast, we kept hearing about how Canada was upset with the USA because the USA wouldn't sign on to the Kyoto Accord.
Right,
and
right.
Canada was going to back the Kyoto Accord. The USA needed to learn to be part of the global community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then it came out. The UN did a study on what the various nations that signed on would have to do to begin making carbon emission corrections. And it came out that per capita, Canada was a worse offender with carbon emissions than the USA was. So it's not a bigger, it's not a bigger offender than carbon emissions total, but per capita it was considerably worse. And
mm-hmm.
the Kyoto Accord just quietly dropped out of the Canadian agenda. But that's the way things happen here in Canada. It's not that things are necessarily hidden. I mean, there's freedom of information here. The country's a lot like the USA. It's just that
mm-hmm.
things have a way of falling out of sight when they're no longer popular, when they don't meet whatever the
mm-hmm.
current government agenda is. And so over the last 10 years, I mean, that wasn't even the trigger for this. What's happened is over the last 10 years, in my own life here as a homesteader, a naturalist, my work as a therapist and a writer, I've had any number of people, scientists, investigators, politicians, leak to me over the years that the government has been quietly whittling away environmental protections. The government under the Harper administration has stripped a vast amount of land from federal protection. This is highly sensitive. Boreal environment land has been stripped so that it could be mined. The regulations in particular protecting forests and the way that they're harvested have been stripped. There used to be rules saying that loggers had to keep a certain distance from waterways and hedges of a certain size had to be left. I think they call them legacy islands or sometimes wildlife corridors. Those have been stripped. If you go out to the backcountry these days and you find the clear cuts, which are not hard, they tend to be hidden so that people from roads and communities can't see them, but it's easy to hide them. You don't need too many trees in between to hide a clear cut. And you'll see, I posted something just a day or two ago, you'll see these vast swaths, sometimes tens of thousands of acres that are cut with these dots that are so small. They're like the dot over an eye in comparison to the page of a book. And those are supposed to be where the wildlife go and live after the land is cut. You'll see these narrow strips that are maybe 10 feet wide and 1,000 feet long that have been left behind, which are supposed to be the corridors for wildlife to move in. Really what they are, more than anything, I call them cosmetic hedges, because the purpose of them, when you look at these from a distance, it makes it look like the forest is still there, which is something I intend to illustrate once I get onto the aerial part of shooting the documentary, putting a drone into the air and filming down really shows how this works. You look at the land from level, and it looks like there's a vast forest stretching out to the horizon. You get airborne, you go up even just 100 feet, and you can start to see it's just lines of cosmetic hedges that are hiding away vast swaths of clear cuts that go on and on. There's been a number of things that have really, really led to this. We have so little old-growth forest left in southern Canada. Here in the Maritime Provinces in Nova Scotia and PEI, there's less than 1%, and they push hard into that. And then of all the madness, they started this. They're pretty much stripping what remains of the forest in general for pulp production, which some people say it goes to become pelletized fuel for Europe or European or Asian markets. Some say it goes on to be paper. And then worse still, they've started what retired biologist Robert Bancroft has referred to as industrial-scale harvesting for this biomass fuel generation. So industrial-scale harvesting, typically when you think of loggers, what you're thinking of is men going in there with chainsaws, and they cut the trees. Sometimes they cut them selectively. You know, they take the older trees, the sick trees, and they remove those from the forest, and the forest has a chance to regenerate. But with this industrial-scale harvesting, they go in there with these vast machines. They don't bother cutting the trees. That takes time, and they're losing. They just want the cellulose. They want burnable material. They rip the trees right out of the ground, roots and all. So in this photo that I had posted on the Internet just a day or two ago, it shows a region of land, a region of forest, after it has been harvested for biomass. And it looks like the moon. It's all dead. There is nothing left except for these tiny little legacy islands, which I think are maybe like 50 feet or 100 feet in diameter, in a cut that goes on for thousands and thousands of acres. I don't know how anything ever will regrow on there. The topsoil is totally destroyed.
What comes to my mind is the amount of wind and water erosion of your topsoil, your loam, that's needed to, for other plants to come back and to regenerate it. And by doing that, you are destroying that aspect of the earth.
Absolutely. It has to be vast. And, you know, we have a situation similar here as in terms of soil. We have a similar situation here in Canada that they have in Brazil. For decades, ecologists in Brazil have been warning people against cutting the forest there and farming because the soil simply can't support it. The jungle might look very lush. That's because the jungle itself holds the soil in place. Without the forest, there's only a very thin layer of topsoil, and it's easily eroded away. And so when the jungle there is destroyed, the forest, trees grow back, but it's never the same. It never becomes a mature forest again, not in the way it was before. The destruction is just too broad. And we have the same thing here. In much of Canada, very little of Canada actually has deep topsoil and arable land. Most of it is semi-boreal or boreal regions, and the soil is acidic.
Well, the glacier ice is what scraped it down into what we call now the Midwest. The topsoil, as the glaciers were forming and moved farther south, that's where, you know, shoved the topsoil down into the northern part of the United States. Henceforth, you know, Canada has thin topsoil.
It has thin topsoil, yes, and the country, by and large, is not arable country. Our homestead, we have a very large homestead comparatively here in Nova Scotia, back in the woods. And but it's not the kind of thing, even if I wanted to, say, convert the whole thing into a farm, I couldn't. Because most anywhere on this land, if you were to drop a plow into the soil, it wouldn't be 2 inches till you're hitting rock, boulders.
Right.
We have enormous gardens here, but we have spent years and years cultivating soil there, dumping tons and tons of compost from our farm animals and basically building up the soil over there so that they could be productive. That's typical of much of Canada. Now, Nova Scotia is richer than some of the other provinces because it's a low-lying province. It's out in the ocean. It has warmer weather. The soil here is a bit better. But as a rule, when
it sounds like a new dust bowl that we had during the 30s here, and they learned, our agriculture people learned from that experience, and now we're starting to lose it again because everything for oil drilling and everything for deforestation, anytime they can get the opportunity, big business will grab that opportunity, and it's very bad because You're describing a real horrendous situation, Cliff. And boy, your film is going to illustrate this now, right?
That is the purpose of the film, to bring this to light. I mean, Canada the people are polite. The people as people are nice and polite. But when you get up to the government level, the bureaucratic level, and the business level, there is a tradition. You can hardly even call it caving to business. If business wants something in this country, business is going to get it. Just as an example, in the province of Quebec is one of the last asbestos mines left in the first world. They sell the asbestos to the third world because nobody else will take it. And even though this is a carcinogenic substance, that mine is allowed to do so because big business wants it. I've had several environmental investigators leak to me over the last 5 years that the Harper administration has quietly ordered, there's nothing official, it's just you can't do it, you're not supposed to do it, has quietly ordered them, they are not to prosecute environmental violations by big business. So, you know, big industry pretty much has carte blanche to do what they want in this country right now.
Sounds like
that was the same
thing we had with Cheney and Bush a few years back.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's real disgusting, and I'm very sorry to hear that. I had no idea that it was going on to that level up in Canada. Boy, that's
nobody
just
thinks
something
about
else.
It, which is the reason we need this radio. I mean, typically to this very day, if you say deforestation, people will tend to think most people in North America will tend to think the Amazon. And if they follow world news a little bit further, they might think of the Asian forest. But Canada is and has been for some time the number one deforester in the world.
Wow.
They just tear the forest. And from what I've seen, from the photos I've seen of the way the forest is cut in the Amazon, it's done worse here. I mean, they go in with heavy machinery for these biomass projects, and they rip the forest out of the ground. It's very in the government culture and the business culture here are exceedingly short-sighted. There is a sense that if we can make money now, then that is a good deal. There's no long-term sense. And I started producing YouTube videos just a couple months ago after, you know, a number of my readers had been asking me to do them for a while. And the first video I spent about 5 minutes in, it was a video on hunting chanterelles, and I couldn't help myself. I spent about 5 minutes in there, halfway into the video, in a rant about how I'd been in the forest for just a couple of hours and I'd already found more mushrooms in a few acres of land, then the value of cutting the trees would be worth. He says, so, you know, those of us up here that are trying to push the government in terms of long-term thought and sustainability, it's not that we're failing to recognize people need to make a living. What we're saying is, let's look at things more realistically. You know, we can grow this forest, because we're up in the north. Forests take a long time to grow here. So we can grow this forest for 30, 40, 50 years, and we can do a cut of timber at a value of a few thousand dollars per acre. Or we can grow this forest for 30, 40, 50 years. Let it mature. Let it develop forest herbs. Let it develop forest fungi. Let it develop rare woods and such. We can selectively harvest trees. You've got a good straight tree with perfect timber going. Let's cut that and sell it to luthiers to use as tone woods. The value of that one tree will far exceed every other tree in this forest. Let's teach people how to harvest wild mushrooms. The market for culinary wild mushrooms is vast. Let's teach people how to harvest the herbs and use them. Let's encourage the development of wild food farms, which are more and more popular all around the world. There are a number of them starting up in Europe and such. Canada is decades behind the rest of the world in this type of thinking.
I was going to say, let me interject here. I had a friend, Jack would have known him, in the rural areas of France, and he would go out with his dog and go hunt truffles. Yep. And, of course, truffles grow on the roots of oak trees.
Yep.
The cost of truffles is more than the value of gold.
Truffles are $100.
Let's put that in perspective. You know, if there was gold out there, they'd rip up the earth. But there's truffles, a live plant growing on the roots of oak trees that is worth more than gold by weight.
And let me point out too, that is so indicative of how today's so-called conservatives are not conservative at all. In the old days, conservatives used reasoned judgment. They'd study a situation. They'd make the best decision they could based on the future of the country or the community or whatever area that they were trying to rule or preside over. Nowadays, it's everything's for profit, and let's get it right now, immediately, and let's not even worry about the consequences. That is such a stark contrast, just in a generation or two, and that's a very dangerous situation that's happening really worldwide now.
Cliff, can I ask you, is Canada, and I'm ashamed that I'm not, this is not coming to mind, I don't know, is Canada part of the TPP?
Yes.
Yeah, they are. And the TPP will just enable further action like this to the extent of even suing you for suing them. Am I, you know, from what I gather on the tenets of that piece of paper, it's pretty awful for any country. But if Canada is this far along, that serves as a very, very bad thing. I mean, I'm just bringing it up because it's become so much a part of the political conversation down here.
I'm a naturalist. Now, the TCP is not something
the
I don't
Trans-Pacific Partnership, Cliff.
Partnership?
It's a gathering of all the Pacific Rim countries, United States, Mexico, Peru, all of those guys. And it's very pro-corporate, very pro-business, very pro-wealthy, and it just decimates everybody else's rights, economic, social, and otherwise. Country can sue another country based on the fact that its corporations may lose money on something. Yeah, I've never heard of anything so insane in my life, but that's what they're trying to pass.
Well, what
Canada currently, I did see a stat earlier today that Canada is currently the most sued nation in the world. The country... Oh, it's going to offend a lot of my Canadian friends and neighbors. But I'll tell you, I've lived much of my life in the States and elsewhere in the world. I've traveled a lot.
Right.
You know, Americans, speaking as a guy who's an American and a Canadian, I can say from the American perspective, Americans as a rule like Canada. We really like Canada.
We
see Canadians as very naive. And to allow foreign competitors to just say, well, we want your resources and we're going to sue you if you don't give them to us. Honestly, it's a joke. Can you imagine something like that quite happening in Europe? It might, but I don't think they're going to have a snowball.
Well, they have a separate arrangement for Europe that'll be much the same. That's what's so dangerous. This is a corporate money grab that's almost worldwide. It takes the vast majority of the world's economies into account here, and it's a very, very dangerous situation. And we're fighting like hell down here to get it defeated.
It's coalescing the largest members of the industrial caucus, if you will, of corporations on the planet that do nothing but strip resources for profit.
Mm-hmm.
It is all bent in their direction. And what they are doing with this pact actually is putting in a world... worldview for what do they call it? It's a global treaty, and it has no. Once it's signed, the courts are almost out of the way.
You might as well throw away your government. Your sovereignty is gone.
And your government, and even your individual land rights or property holdings, are all put to side. For basically the stripping of resource for these global industrial companies, and it's God, I'm missing the phrase. It was a Bushism, a world.
New world
order?
New world order.
Right, a new world order, and this is a stepping stone in that direction.
The bad world order.
Well, governments all over
who
have made a profession out of caving to big industry for quite some time. I did want to briefly harken back to that illustration that one of you had mentioned about the truffles. It's an excellent illustration that's directly relevant to what's going on here with deforestation. Canada, maple trees are a temperate forest tree. And they grow all the way in Canada, all the way till you hit the boreal line. So, you know, that's why Canada, Quebec and New Brunswick and such, they're famous for maple syrup and such, all the way out to Ontario. Well, truffles also grow on maples. And, yes, the value of truffles is hundreds of dollars per pound. Certain truffles can bring in, I've read, as much as $1,100 per pound. And they do grow. We have at least 11 species of truffles that grow in the maple forest here. But good luck finding maple forest because they've all been torn up to use for pulp, for furniture. They're torn up way faster than they can possibly
be. The biodiversity has been destroyed. And the same thing on the peninsula I live on, where my farm is. They've destroyed the diversity, the biodiversity of the forest to plant loblolly pines, i.e. pulp trees.
Well, that's another extremely relevant point right there, because many of these forestry companies try to paint themselves white by going back and saying, well, yeah, it's true we cut the forest, but we planted millions of trees in response.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't replanting the forest that was there. They are replanting pulp species. In fact, I liken what they plant. I've actually taken footage of it already for the video. You know, you go through a forest that hasn't been cut. You have this living forest. There's birds. There's animals. There's all kinds of varieties of trees, mushrooms everywhere. You go through one of the forests that they have supposedly replanted. As far as you can see, you have one species of tree, one species of spruce that's grown, that's selected specifically because it grows fast, can be harvested young, it grows dense to produce pulp. These trees grow so closely together, very little in the way of wildlife can even pass through these trees. And there aren't many animals that can go through a forest and eat nothing but spruce and the sphagnum moss that manages to grow underneath them. These are green deserts. They are not planting forests back. They are not reinvigorating the land. They are creating green deserts. Now, the average person looks at that and they think, there's a forest out there. There is not. There is a green desert. It might be
a lot of things. That's a great point, Cliff. And you mentioned that in your video, right?
What's that?
You mentioned that in your video, right?
I don't think I talked about the green desert, the reforestation, how they're going about the reforestation.
That would be very vital, I would think. It's very important, and it's something that can't be overlooked. So, but I'm glad you're attacking them on so many other levels.
I'll post video updates on the Indiegogo site to some new information.
Yeah, okay. My goodness.
David is putting a few facts in the chat room. And the first one he wanted to get out that succincts the TPP is it's a world economy that where corporate rights supersede national and local rights and laws, corporate profits trump individual governance. And then he just mentioned that $330,000 were paid for 3.3 pounds of white truffles. That's a huge amount of money for truffles.
Yeah.
Give me that number, Glenn. I didn't quite wrap my head around that.
$330,000 was paid for 3.3 pounds of white truffles.
That's the ones I was talking about.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I need to get out in the woods and get up
more valuable
on this documentary.
I got an idea. Grow truffles. You're going to pay for your documentary alone on that.
Well, I'm fortunate. I have old growth forest on my land, and so help me God, it'll be protected, but I can't protect what's beyond my borders.
Well, that's what I've done with my farm, too.
Hopefully your film will aid you very greatly in that respect. And this is a very critical time to put this forth, and I can't wait to see it, to tell you the truth, because it is so relevant to stopping the evils of what is happening right now, and it's so vitally important for our entire environment and everything else. Man, we can't allow this stuff to continue.
We can't. People go through their lives. We live at a time in history where I think it's easy to be detached from the environment. That's why my last two books have focused so much on. Rather than writing books on environmentalism, which I had contemplated doing, you're just preaching to the audience. So the last two books I wrote about what it was like to live, because I meet lots of people, they wish they could live on a farm, they wish they could live in the country, they wonder what it's like, they have no idea what it's like. So I wrote books about what it's like to actually be out there and doing things. It sort of get people to wake up. This is the first time in history that the majority of the population have lived in urban areas. Now, not just lived there, but where they are multi-generationally living in urban areas. They don't really have a concept of what they're losing. I think they look out beyond their high-rise or their office building or whatnot. They see green beyond the boundaries of the city, and they think all is well, but all is not well. And it is so important for people to wake up to what is out there. It's very, very easy to go about life unawares. It's easy to get caught up in paying bills and the struggle. It's more expensive now than in the last 50 years to get by. It's easy to get caught up in the struggle of just getting by and to lose sight of these things. People fall asleep.
The corporate media is to blame, too, because people don't get a clear picture of what is happening and why it is important to be aware of it, because you're distracted by insane Hollywood crap and stuff that doesn't really matter, but they make a big issue of it on corporate-owned media, and people they find it entertaining, so they watch it, and that's all they think about. They don't think about the real issues. That's why we're out here, to try and get people's focus differently.
The stuff that makes it in the news headlines. What did I see today? It was some movie star took a selfie in a bikini, and somebody was breaking up with his girlfriend, and something about some monarch somewhere.
And who cares?
Not a whole lot about what the stuff that really matters.
Exactly right. That's my point.
I have a question for you from the chat room, and they're asking, ask him what he thinks of the more aggressive environmental groups. At what point does action trump discussion? A subject I've been going over mentally for years. I think we're all beginning to ask ourselves seriously questions like this and pushing our chairs away from it to a certain degree, but the question stands for you, Cliff. What do you think?
I'm curious about what environmental groups the person is referring to. I know that, just as an example, here in Canada, the Harper administration, the conservative government, likes to attempt to equate environmentalists with terrorists. There was an internal document that was leaked a couple of years ago where an RCMP officer had stated that the greatest threat to national security in the future of Canada was not terrorists, it would be environmentalists doing what they could to suppress Canada becoming
insane.
An energy power in the world and such. Now, the only act of violent environmental terrorism that has ever occurred on Canadian soil was actually conducted by the RCMP attempting to frame environmentalists that were protesting the development of it was oil sands or a pipeline or some such. I forget. It's been a while since I read it. But the RCMP, there were these persons. They were protesting. Apparently, they were having some effect. And the RCMP bombed a tool shed to try to make it look like them. And that's not hearsay. All you have to do is Google this. Go on Google and Google RCMP bombs tool shed, frames environmentalists. It was in the Huffington Post. It was in various Canadian newspapers. This is well established. There have been no acts. I mean, really, what are environmentalists for the most part? For the most part, environmentalists are housewives. They're educated academics. They're business people that care. They're people that want a better world for their children.
Yes.
Not people that are going to go out and pick up AK-47s or drop bombs or anything. They want a better world for their children.
Right.
Well, then we have people that are a bit more radical, like Captain Watson. You know what? I laud Captain Watson. Captain Watson went out there and he chased off people that were violating national law, hunting whales, hunting species to extinction. The damned UN is supposed to be doing for themselves and simply ignoring, maybe because of corporate pressure, maybe because they don't want to spend the funds to do it. My guess would be the former, actually. But he went out and he did it. He did the right thing. Did he attack anybody? No. Did he sink any ships? No. He went out there and he did the job that was supposed to be done. And that's typically even the ones that have in the past been thought of as more radical, like Earth First. What's the worst Earth First ever did? They spiked a tree and then left a sign saying these trees have been spiked? Well, they didn't want to hurt anybody. They told you the tree has been spiked. Don't cut here.
Right.
Well, the other question posed, too, is just how you went is was the point that David was bringing up, He's asking, does a person that considers natural resources as a right for all to enjoy over the desired profits of the few, are they terrorists?
Does
good
a person
question.
Who considers the rights of natural resources or natural resources a right for all to enjoy over the desired profits of a few, are they terrorists?
Yeah.
That's a good point. The Harper administration seems to like to categorize persons that way.
They're drawing from the Bush administration in doing so, and that's a very big disaster. Boy, I sure hope that guy loses power soon.
Let's hope. There's Election Day coming October 19th. I saw an article earlier today
that said
there's already record numbers turning out at the polls, and my hope is that's a lot of angry people voting to remove them.
I hope so, too.
In truth, I don't know exactly what it will do, though, because it is virtually a Canadian tradition to cave to the interests of big business.
Yeah.
Canada has a low population. It's always had a much lower population than the USA. It's a forested nation.
Right.
It's from one coast to the other. Forestry here is a tradition in Canada. It's one of these sacred cows, and nobody seems to like to touch it, even though it has simply gotten out of hand. We have a situation over here in Nova Scotia. We have a mill called Northern Pulp, and Northern Pulp is operating at like 1940s or 50s levels of technology. They're dumping massive amounts of pollution into the air and the water, cutting vast amounts of forest unsustainably. It's like the hot potato that decades of government did not want to touch. Now, the Liberal government, don't confuse Canadian Liberals with American Liberals. They're not really the same. They're kind of like conservatives under a different label.
Right.
But the Liberal government finally did a little bit to address them, but it was half-hearted. It was like, so at the taxpayers' expense, they gave them a precipitator to help reduce the emissions. The water, the polluted water is still flowing out into the bay. The massive clear cutting with virtually no restriction is still going on. I mean, in the long term, nothing effective has been to address this.
It's hard to battle corporations and win decisively. It takes many, many, many years and a great deal amount of consciousness building. I was going to ask you, if you know, Cliff, the New Democratic Party sparks my interest because I know they're considerably to the left of the so-called Liberals and definitely to the left of the Tories. How are they doing electorally in Canada right now? They're still a small minority, aren't they?
When the new election was first called, we don't schedule our elections the same way they are in the USA. They don't happen, you know, every 4 years. They happen at a certain maximum period of time, but they can be called for earlier. So when the new election was called, the NDP held a lead. Last I heard, the Conservatives were holding a slight lead. But, you know, it's when you're looking at margins this small, anything could happen. I think this election is probably going to come down to between the NDP and the Tories. But I'm not a political expert by any means.
Well, I hope the NDP is victorious, and I hope they can forge a coalition that will enable them to block much of the Tory agenda. Because another George Bush right above our border, man. That is just bad news.
Really is. And, yeah, I'd like to see them win. They have been the only ones that have been steadfast in opposing a number of things like Bill C-51, sort of the Canadian equivalent of the American Patriot Act and such. They've been the only ones that have really stood steadfastly against this sort of. And the Greens do, too, but the Greens just don't have the numbers yet.
Well, let's hope most people coalesce around the parties of the left and get some very needed and beneficial change happening up there north of our border. And I say the same thing is true for the U.S. We are so embroiled in corporatism, and it's just devastating every aspect of our culture. You know, from the movies we watch to the entertainment to the channels we have on TV and radio. I mean, it's pervasive. It's strangling the country, and that is not good.
Well, generations of people now raised to believe that they, who they are and what they are and their personal worth is defined by their job title, their income, their promotion, and what gadgets they own. Do they own the right car? Do they own the right phone? Do they own a house in the right neighborhood?
Brainwashed. I call it
very
brainwashed.
Very remarkably shallow ways of defining oneself.
Very true. Good point.
There's been some incredible studies in regard to that, too. And, again, you know, it's these things that slip slip by the wayside, but they're so important. And my work as a therapist, I've been profoundly interested in the study of happiness for decades, defining what it is and how it's attained. And the UN launched these brilliant studies on happiness about almost 25 years. I think they've been going 21, 22 years now. And they're supposed to run for 50 years total, but they've been publishing the results since year 15. And the happiness studies have shown consistently year after year that happiness has virtually nothing to do with the job that we do, with how much money we earn. In fact, with all the things that people typically think will make them happy. Happiness has to do with whether or not we live in a peaceful place and whether or not we have a clean environment, whether or not we have good relationships with family and friends, whether or not
we can afford food.
And to pursue our dreams and develop ourselves personally or spiritually.
Good point. Yep.
These are the things upon which happiness depends. And as a therapist, I see a lot of people that are absolutely miserable and have no idea why. And yet, by and large, people are pursuing the very things that lead them nowhere. Nowhere.
Yeah. It's kind of paradoxical in a certain and it's being forged. It really is being forged by people that have kind of a rather evil or nasty agenda. And a lot of people are getting hoodwinked, and it's a real sad thing. And we believe in spreading the truth and let people use their own minds and their own intelligence to deal with that truth and have a positive impact as a result. But it's an uphill struggle when you're battling purveyors of nonsense, you know.
Well, Jack and Glenn, I've always said, and I've said many times, I don't care what you accomplish in life. I don't care what kind of values of, you know, your house and car and things like that. If you haven't raised your kids right, you have failed. And you haven't instilled the value of what natural resources and nature and the big picture over, say, what the Koch brothers have done with oil and their influence, they have failed. They have not raised their kids right.
Exactly.
Daddy Koch did not raise his boys right. The boys are continuing the John Birch Society called the Tea Party.
You know, gentlemen, I think that every one of us could agree, and especially some of the guests in the chat room, the most important thing and the happiest place we ever get to is when we're healthy, especially if we come close to losing that good health. And the other thing I've noticed, too, is gratitude. And the only way I really ever have any gratitude, true gratitude in my life, it's always been being grateful for being of good service. In other words, serving or being of service to someone.
Serving others.
Steward of the land, steward of society, steward of,
Yes, stewardship, if you will. Stewardship and service.
Being
and,
selfless rather than selfish. That's the key there.
Yes, and you have to afford yourself the opportunity to do that. There are many on this planet right now that simply can't, and especially locked up in the urban prison of, you know, 9 to 5 and all of that. Not all of them, but I mean the poor, the disenfranchised and all of that, but that is our opportunity also to be of service, whether it's the environment or it's the poor situation in the community. Stepping forward and being helpful in some way, that helps.
That's the key, Gwen. That's the key. Great, great point. And people have got to start realizing. And I think a lot of the younger generation are starting to realize that it's pointless to accumulate wealth just for the sake of having it. And it's better to have a we situation rather than a me for a situation. And I applaud that very much, and I hope it continues very strong and it ends up being victorious over this crazy me generation stuff we've been seeing.
Well, Cliff, the reason I said that too is you're a practicing psychologist. Isn't that when you see a difference in someone's ongoing recovery from a bad space of life or whatever? It's when they're getting up and on their own 2 feet, as it were, and helping out.
Tell me a little bit more, Gwen.
Well, being of service, I mean, I know from my own experience that And I think every human being we go through the roller coaster of life, the polarities, the ups and downs, so that we learn and grow. And we make choices. But when we get up on off our ass and onto our own 2 feet again, as it were, and I'm using a metaphor for being happier and healthier in life, it's usually when we make the choice to be of use, be of help, even if it's pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps. But isn't it taking that action that initiates, I mean, I'm asking you as the psychologist.
Well, I think people certainly get a lot more out of that, yes. I have never, over the years at this point, I've had so many thousands of clients, I just don't even remember the number. I have files, so I could go back and count if I wanted to, but I don't even remember the number. But in all those years, I've had lots and lots of clients that spent their whole lives basically building up their fortunes and serving themselves. I have these clients often because they're depressed, they're anxious, they're not happy. Occasionally they're wondering what it was all about. I had one fellow once a long time ago, it was one of the first clients I ever had, in fact, older gentleman, very well-dressed, had come to my office and had an interesting story, had inherited a failing family business and built it up to a multi-million dollar success story. And, you know, he said it was like I spent my whole life getting to the penthouse office and discovering the office was empty.
I don't know how he could get
all those years back and redo his life, right? And what do you tell somebody like that? I mean, you can try to tell them we can work on doing better where you're at now, but yeah, every second is a missed opportunity if you haven't used it well. But you know, I've never, in all those thousands and thousands of clients, I've never, ever had one single person who came to me and said, you know, I spent my whole life trying to make a better world, whether it was environmental work or social work or running homeless shelters or rescuing stray animals, whatever it was they could do. Never had one person who came to me and said, I spent my whole life trying to make a better world, living my dreams, loving my family, caring for my friends, and regretted that. Not once.
Right, yeah.
I have clients who've been starving artists and struggling writers and whatnot, and you know, they're living on mac and cheese and trying to get by from day to day. And they might be dealing with some kind of stress. You know, it could be just trying to figure out how to juggle the bills or find a way to cope with a relative who had passed away, that sort of thing. But they're never coming to see me because they're regretting having spent their lives pursuing a higher cause ever. So, yeah, absolutely. There's a great deal of personal growth and fulfillment that comes.
Very good point, yeah. Hey, Cliff, while I think of it, I think it's important for you to give us an idea, or maybe you have done this in the previous show, which I wasn't a part of. Tell us the name of your proposed film, if you've got one for it yet, what you think you're going to call it.
Oh, yes,
and let us know, let the readers know how they can...
A Forest Under Siege.
What is it again?
A Forest Under Siege.
Okay.
And it's on Indiegogo, and the subtitle is The Real Story Behind Canada's Forestry and Environmental Holocaust.
Right, so people can contribute via Indiegogo to A Forest Under Siege, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. And I encourage everybody to do so. Boy, do we need more films like this. This is just sounds incredible. And what is your proposed timeline? How would you like to, how soon would you like to finish this?
If I can get the funds to do this, I am hoping to have this ready to go for next September. To me, every day is critical because the forest is stripped at the rate of thousands of acres an hour.
The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking. Yep, that's right. Well, that's great, Cliff, and I applaud you very much for this wonderful endeavor, and I encourage all of our listeners to really think about, use it as a Christmas present, you know, in somebody else's name. You can get a tax deduction for stuff like this. It's very very important for people to help fund these very worthwhile efforts like this. This sounds like a great film, and I can't wait to see it completed.
Thank you.
Well, and every amount counts.
$5, $10, $100, whatever you can do.
It
right.
does, and I want to add on there. For, we also, donors get some very lovely things back, and you know, Indiegogo has rules that that people need to get something back. I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So every we take donations from $10 all the way to $1,000. We're only looking for $10,000 to make this documentary. It's really not that much in total for something that's going to take roughly a year to complete. However,
right.
Like the $10 one, they get a special 10-minute access to a special 10-minute documentary on the making of it. Donations, my publisher contributed quite a few books so that donors at the $40 and $50 level get signed copies of my last book, Seasons of the Sacred Earth, and the $50 level they get signed copies of The Wildwood Way, and they get other things too, early access to the documentary when it's ready, I at the higher levels, like say 100 and so on, there's also artwork. I've been doing wilderness photography semi-professionally for quite a few years, and a number of art, in fact, all of the prints that I've ever produced are available as rewards on there, both as limited edition posters and canvas prints. There's some nice things there for those, so that when they donate something, they get, whether it's for a Christmas gift or a memento of the donation or whatnot, there are a number of things there for donors to receive as well.
Yeah, that's great, Cliff, and let's hope everybody responds. It's hard work raising funds, but the more we can push it, the better off everything will be, and the better off our planet will be in the future. So it's very important for everybody to take advantage of this great offer. Go to Indiegogo and contribute to A Forest Under Siege, because it's a very worthwhile project, and it will help everybody, not just yourself, not just your film, everything. Everybody will benefit from it.
Cliff, will you let folks know where else they can find you? I mean, I got to know you on Facebook. Wow, reading your posts is like taking a break in the middle of the day when I get to read about what you're up to out there. Let people know where they can find you, from Facebook to your blog.
Oh, sure. Anybody can just Google me, because I have a fair presence these days online. I have a blog or website, closerantine.wordpress.com. Or if they just go on YouTube and type in my name, it'll take persons to the YouTube channel that I've started. I suppose you could always just go onto the site for a bookstore itself, like Amazon, or up here in Canada, we have chapters.ca, and just type in my name there in any one of those places. I'm actually fairly
easy to look. Spell your last name for the listeners again, so that they can write it down.
It's S-E-R-U, N as in Nancy, T as in Tom, I-N-E.
Serutine. Okay, great. Yeah, that's important, so people won't get confused and will not go to the wrong site or not be able to find what they're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the good thing about the last name, despite how weird it is that if you spell it right, you probably have the only person you could possibly
get. That's true.
Because there aren't many of us.
I'm glad we had you spell that out for everybody. So it's very, very good effort. And boy, I just can't wait for this to come out. And we'd love to have you back at some point, I'm sure, to discuss this further and any new developments and how the fundraising campaign's going and things like that. So you're welcome. I'm speaking for all three of us, I'm sure. You're more than welcome to participate again. We love having activists like
absolutely.
You're an activist
this
to a certain extent.
Sorry,
I might have missed something.
Very intellectually stimulating.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. So you're welcome.
Thank you.
Remind us
again when the Wildwood Way is coming on sale.
That'll be on November 8th.
Wonderful.
That should appear. You'll be able to find that at probably any bookstore.
That's your the latest book, and it's called The Wildwood Way. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll look for that too, definitely. Yeah, well, it's just so many good things are going on in the world, people. All you got to do is get away from the Kim Kardashian nonsense and start looking, Google and go to Facebook and look at things that are happening in this world that are so good for everybody. And, if you take part in it, if you help take part in a fundraiser like this, you'll have the satisfaction and you will see a good result from it, and you'll have the satisfaction, the self-satisfaction, of knowing that you played an integral part in the creation of a very noble project.
Well, also, I think that it's intrinsic in Cliff's work and in his desire to work towards saving his environment is also the message of, you know, even if you live in a city, you can get to know nature, get back
yes.
out into nature, sit down,
right.
just go outside and sit in the grass for a while, let your feet feel it, just appreciate the animal life around you. I mean, hey, I got street dragons. Other people call them iguanas. I call them street dragons. I mean, I have relationships with my people, and they're
great.
All, they got all kinds of legs, and I watched a snake slough its skin off in my backyard.
Yeah. Oh, it molted right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, you can go out and get to know nature and observe the lessons you're getting taught by nature. Look for bees. Invite the bees, you know.
Listen to the birds. Listen to them chirping. A lot of people just overlook all that stuff. It's very relaxing, and it really, I think it lowers your blood pressure to just sit and listen and observe and slow down and get away from this chasing for money stuff. And, you know, take a look at the world around you and value it and enjoy it. And that will be very beneficial for you physically, too.
You know, the Japanese have been conducting research into what they refer to as forest therapy for a number of years now. And it actually confirmed what you folks are talking about, that going out, walking in the forest, breathing in the air, being exposed to natural settings is tremendously healing. It does reduce hypertension. It reduces risk of various diseases, cancer and others. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful force.
It is.
Yeah, but most of all, support Cliff's beautiful effort here. Get over to Indiegogo, A Forest Under Siege, and please donate as generously as you can, because it will be very worthwhile for you, in the short term and in the long term. Remember, you get certain perks with your donation, and you'll have the great satisfaction of knowing you helped in your own small way. Help make this a better world for the future generations and for children and grandchildren to come.
That's what really counts, Jack, right there.
Yep.
Even a better off for the next generation. I'm thinking of my
daughter. Leave this world in a better spot than what we inherited it. You know, let's make it better. Let's do an improvement. That's the most best thing we can do with our lives, is to make a better world. Leave the world better when we leave it than when we first obtained it.
Very good. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being with us again. I hope that when your book comes out, you'll have time to stop by and tout it sometime in November again. And very good luck with A Forest Under Siege and raising money. Anything we can do to help it along, please let us know.
Thank you very much.
Please do.
Thank you.
Yep.
So.
And my website is down. I mean, it will be down because my computer is down, and you won't see anything new on it for a while. But I'm at the Saturday Afternoon Post, and I'm Jack Jodell. And I always say at the end of every show, keep pushing forward. That's the only way we can go. We can't go backward any further. Wayne, tell them about your site.
It's Minds and Times. Both of those words are plural. Of F. Wayne Johnson. Describes what I've done politically in the past with the clout of one-on-ones with Jack Kemp and other things that I've fought, environmental battles and things like that. And I'll always look forward to anybody's comments on those aspects. So. And Gwen, how about you?
Well, I'd like to remind everybody that the Sunday show is sponsored by Roundtree7, the number 7.com. Go on over and check out that blog and see what we're posting over there. Always good stuff to wake you
great
up.
Great writing.
How you're getting shafted by your government this week, anyway. Listen, I'm the radical. You guys are the other side. You're the calm part.
We're your compatriots, Gwen.
Well, the bottom line, I say, we're all pulling on the same oars. We're all trying to get to a better life for ourselves, for our kids, and
the
nation,
world in general,
and everything in general. We've got to keep progressing.
That's it, guys. We're out of time. Thank you so much, Cliff, and a good night to you and all your family up there. Stay safe, and much fortune with getting this done.
Thank you.
Very good, and good night all.
Yes, good night all, and thank you, Cliff. Very delightful today. We'll look forward to talking with you again. Gwen, thank you for another great show. Appreciate it a great deal, and we'll talk to everybody next week. So keep pushing forward, everyone.
And that's all she wrote for the Sunday show. We will be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. Tune in and give us a listen. Thank you. All right.